Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I'm Michael Savage. More and more people tell me they love my personal stories. They may or may not agree with my politics, but they love personal stories. And I've been thinking more and more about that. Perhaps in the age of Obama, we conservatives should not even express our opinions, because it's kind of un-American to not salute neo-socialism. And maybe I should just tell personal stories and ignore the socialism of Obama completely, and kind of not even talk about American values, borders, language, and culture. It's kind of antiquated to believe in borders, language, and culture, don't you think? Oh, I got to turn that off on my computer. It's so noisy. But if you'd rather me just, for the rest of my radio career, however long that may be, read you, from Psychological Nudity, or I can read from Healing Children Naturally, because I want to be a good American. I want to be an American who gets along and goes along. I want to be an American who is loved. I want to be an American who, well, just worships the Obamas. I mean, I want to read about them stepping out at night. I want to read more stories about Obama goes to dinner. I want to see more stories about the Obamas' walk in the park. I can't wait to get up in the morning and see Obama playing with his dog. I can't wait to see Obama, Mrs. Obama in her sneakers. Now, that's a true American. An un-American believes in antiquated things such as borders, you know, English as the language of the land, you know, stuff like, just nostalgic stuff that perhaps your grandfather believed in, culture, you know, things like that, the Bible, and there's no point in talking about any of that anymore. 99% of Americans love Obama. Well, I think it's 99.9%, and isn't it? We have to root out the 0.1% who don't love the Obamas. They're the real problem in America. And so, therefore, I think I will only talk about personal stories because, as I say, I want to be a true American. And any true American loves the Obamas. They worship the Obamas. He is the Messiah. And anyone who doesn't worship the Messiah is, well, un-American. And perhaps Janet Napolitano should send a tax squad with black helicopters to find anyone who doesn't love the Obamas. That's the new America. And I don't want to be out of step with the times. I want to agree with the bloggers. I want to agree with MoveOn.org. I want to agree with Soros. I want to be a serf like every other serf. I want to surf with the serfs on the internet. And I want to enjoy my life. And the only way to enjoy my life in a growing fascistic society is to get along and go along. Now, I could tell you some political stories, but I really don't want to bum you out. So how about some family stories like One-Armed Frank or Louie and the Monkey, you know, oldie but goodie favorites. I can sing along like Tony Bennett and I Left My Heart in San Francisco and then get up and tell people, like the canary he is, everyone should basically worship Obama, and if they don't, well, God knows. Or like Sean Penn, the genius, the man who can't put three sentences together without sounding like he was visiting three different pharmacies, goes and kisses the ring of the anti-Semite Chavez. The liberal media kisses the ring of Chavez, the most visible anti-Semite on the planet today. Do you know that the year Hugo Chavez was elected president, there were 22,000 Jews in Venezuela? But today the Jewish population is between 10,000 and 15,000. Those numbers tell a story of anti-Semitism in Hugo Chavez's Venezuela. But I don't want to talk about it because it will make me look like I'm un-American. And if Sean Penn, like Chavez, even though he's an anti-Semite, that makes me wrong, doesn't it? It makes me wrong to point out that the Jews are being driven out of Venezuela. It makes me wrong to tell you that the verbiage coming out of Chavez in Spanish, if translated to the German, could be that of Adolf Hitler in the 1930s. And if I told you that verbal and physical attacks on Jews and Jewish institutions in Venezuela in January, for example, were at their greatest level ever, I would make you uncomfortable, and then you might start doubting my Americanism. And I don't want you to doubt my Americanism. And if I tell you that in a report released today, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom puts Venezuela on a watch list of countries where religious freedom is threatened, I don't want to make you think that in any way I'm against Chavez, because Chavez is a good buddy of Obama. After all, Obama and Chavez gave each other the ghetto fist slap, whatever they call it. And I'm sorry to be so out of touch with things that I don't know what the ghetto thing is when you hit fists together. I wish I could use the proper phrase for it. But our leader, our supreme leader, our Messiah, Obama, if he likes Chavez, then I like Chavez. If he says Chavez is a good guy, then I say Chavez is a good guy. And if the Jews are being driven out of Venezuela, well, I guess then we all have to accept that. Because after all, I want to get along and I want to go along. And I don't want to talk about this anymore. I don't want to talk about the Jews being driven out of Venezuela because Sean Penn and the other actors love Chavez. So how could I be right and how could they be wrong? After all, actors are always right. That's why people pay so much money to see them act. They are so good at acting that they must be right about politics. And they're never wrong about anything, so how could they be wrong about Chavez? So if I read that Chavez is a vicious anti-Semite whose language is that of Adolf Hitler in Spanish, why then I must be wrong. And I think that those who oppose Chavez, and in this case agree that Obama should not have visited him, I think that they're wrong. And that's why I say it may be time for me to simply get out of politics and get into storytelling. But, of course, if you wish I do the other, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Has political stories, I'm sorry to tell you. There are many political stories on the website because I'm thinking of converting the entire website to family photos, just black and white family photos from little old Kodak little booklets from the 50s and 60s, because I don't want to upset the social order, because the Messiah is right about everything. That I only want to see happiness in America. I don't want to oppose anybody who believes in Obama. I want to make all those who worship Obama feel good. I want all opposition to Obama to be eliminated. I want anyone who opposes Obama to be investigated. I want anyone who continuously talks against Obama to be jailed. And I want Janet Napolitano, one of the most brilliant women in the history of the world, greater than Marie Curie, possibly one of the most brilliant women in the history of the world, to be put on the Supreme Court. There is no one more brilliant than Janet Napolitano. After all, she wisely targeted returning vets from the Iraq and Afghan theaters as potential terrorists. She wisely targeted people who oppose the murder of unborn children as terrorists. She wisely targeted many, many other fringe groups in America as potential terrorists and paid no attention to our visitors from Central America with tattoos all over their bodies who sell drugs and murder in the streets as threats to America, because she is a wise woman. She knows that if she reaches out to the tattooed clusters of illegals in America, if she reaches out and embraces the clusters of illegal aliens carrying bedbugs, cholera, and other diseases, why, the bedbugs will flee back south of the border. The cholera will flee back south of the border. There will be no disease if only she is kind to them. And the only way to be kind to them is to be hateful towards true Americans, or shall I say, old Americans, patriotic Americans. In fact, anyone who declares themselves to be a patriot should be investigated by the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, and the CIA. And I think special detention camps, well, let us say re-education camps, should be set up by Janet Napolitano, where she can educate anyone who considers themselves a patriot as to how to think in the new America. I'll be right back. Savage. Now, this is going to become the new theme song of the Savage Nation. It's the ex-Soviet Union's national anthem, the Internationale. And I believe that in the new America, the emerging Soviet America under Chairman Obama, I believe we need to change the national anthem of America from that stupid thing about rockets and who knows, whatever the old white people wrote. Play it louder. Let the people hear it proudly. Because I want Janet Napolitano and the FBI to take me off their watch list. I want to show them that I'm a reformed American. I want them to understand I'm a good American. I want them to see that I see the world the way they do, the way the bankers on Wall Street do. That there is no America anymore. There's no need for America anymore. That the idea of borders that men died for, that was a complete waste of time. The things your ancestors fought over, oh, come on now. We don't need to fight over anything anymore. There's no need to fight, is there? Let's all embrace the new world order. All right, thank you, gentlemen. Give them a few pieces of fish and we'll see them, whatever. San Diego, Jerry, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, it was the fight, and I want your opinion about the movie Requiem for a Heavyweight, which was and the character Mount Rivera, which was played by Anthony Quinn.
So you were at the fight? You went and saw Pacquiao knock Hatton on his butt?
No, sir. I just want your opinion on the fight, and you know.
All right, let me start by this. Start the rap music, and I'll give you my answer about the fight. He thought he was the great white hope, but he wound up like a bar of white soap. He tried it to the dope rope, but he only wound up tied up in the rope. Thought he was the great white hope, but he wound up like a bar of soap. On the mat, dear old hat, and the band played on. Thought he was the great white hope, wound up like a bar of soap. Fill in the blanks, that's all. It lasted like 5 minutes. I did watch the fight at home on pay-per-view, $49.95. My dog and I watched it. I tried to find one bar in the San Francisco area that was running it. There was no one. There was one Nazi bar out in the Richmond district that I wouldn't go into. I once had a very bad interchange with a group of Nazis in the bar 30 years ago. Never went back. It used to be known as an Irish bar, but it was really a Nazi bar and blah, blah, blah. I didn't want to go in there. But the fact of the matter is I found out that the reason no bars ran it here is that HBO charges them $1,500 to run, you know, a pay-per-view fight. So I was scheduled to go. There was a seat waiting for me. I had a seat on a friend's plane, but I was sick. I told you I was sick Friday. You know, it was a horrible fight to watch because, and many of you are not fight fans, but I'll make it simple. Hatton is a street brawler and strong as iron for 140-pound man, like one of those old-style, you know, wiry white guys, tough as nails, really great, you know, and a real hero to his people. But Pacquiao is as tough as nails and a better boxer, a better tactician. What happened is that Hatton hired Mayweather as his trainer. And after round one, when he got himself knocked around, you heard Mayweather say to him, "You got to do more than attack him," he was saying to Hatton. Mayweather was saying, "You can't just charge him like a bull. It's not working." He said, "I told you, move your head around. You're a fixed target." Round two, he came out again like a raging bull. Pacquiao had his range, and it was really horrible to watch. I mean, he clobbered him, and that final blow was so powerful that it looked as though the scalp would come off the top of Hatton's head. And the worst scene, frankly, was the picture of Hatton's fiance crying and quivering in the audience. It was something terrible to watch, and it was just what it is, and that's what happened. I mean, look, boxing is, as they say, it's warfare by other means. Two kings. I mean, they're basically two noble gladiators, and their followers at that point. Once they're in the ring, the followers are left outside, and the two kings are left to battle it out, and he lost. In this case, there was one winner and one loser, and frankly, Hatton should leave the ring as far as I'm concerned. As far as the other movie, Requiem for a Heavyweight, highly recommended, very touching. Anthony Quinn is still one of my favorite actors. 1-800-449-8255. Mississippi Josh, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation with Michael. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I turned on the Savage Nation earlier, and I could have sworn the Fairness Doctrine had been implemented.
No, I don't want to upset the government. Don't you understand, Josh? I want them to like me.
I understand that, but I just could have swore it was implemented already. Although, I would like to hear some stories about healing children.
No, no, the government hasn't reached me at all. Janet Napolitano hasn't called me personally. But I want her to understand that I'm friendly to her vision of the New World Order, which is why I'm playing the Communist Internationale.
Well, maybe if all the radio stations do what you do, then they won't have to implement it.
That's right. Don't you think of how much the economy could save if all of us mean right-wing conservatives played the Communist Internationale and praised Obama continuously? Think of how many hundreds of millions of dollars the government could save in scheming to put us out of business. Believe- I mean, it's good for the economy. It would create jobs. It would create jobs because we could, well, we could become happier citizens. We wouldn't make so many millions of people unhappy either. Guys like you wouldn't, well, you wouldn't have to listen to the radio anymore. You wouldn't have to listen to talk radio anymore at all.
Very true.
You know, you would have no reason to go to the radio station anymore if I left. Thanks for the call. What else was I going to do today? Let's see, I did the Internationale, then I played the rap song. What was the next one? I had to get something else. Oh, Hare Krishna, that's right. Yes, we must remember our roots in America. Now, it is said that America was founded under Judeo-Christian principles. But in the new administration, I think we must reach out more broadly than that. I think that if we search far and wide, we could find roots in Hinduism. Somehow, I believe that the founding fathers may have been partly Hindu. If not Hindu, then at least for sure Muslim. There's certainly no indication that they were Christians. Now, this was taught in grade school 50, 60 years ago. But new research conducted by the Department of Archaeological Security under Janet Napolitano has discovered that the roots of America are actually related to the Hindus. As I say, we're trying this out. It's the former national anthem of the ex-Soviet Union, the Communist Soviet Union, the Internationale. And in light of my desire to fit in with the new government and the new policies of the presidency, Congress, the judiciary, which is all Democrat. Now, Democrat, of course, is a very wide statement, as you well know. John F. Kennedy was a Democrat, but by today's standard, he'd be a right-winger. When you say Democrat today, you mean the American Socialist Party. And as I've said to you for years, the Republican Party is basically the liberal party of today. And the Democrats is the, you can call them the Democrat Socialist Party. But that's again, far too much for the average listener. So that's why we're thinking of apologizing for all the years of talking about borders, language, and culture. We're going to also possibly, we're thinking about rebranding this show to the Peaceful Nation, because we don't want to upset anyone. We want to call ourselves the Peaceful Nation, and we want to expunge our violent past where we conducted war against the poor, peaceful Germans and the poor, peaceful communists in Vietnam, for example. I want to rebrand us as the Peaceful Nation. I want to forget all of this rubbish about D-Day, for example, all this nonsense about the Greatest Generation. It's time that we don't teach it anymore. This idea that we were the good ones and the Germans were the bad ones, or that we were the good ones and the Japanese were the imperialists who imprisoned Koreans and such, I think that that should be put aside in the new America, because this is an inclusive country now. It's a nation that's just very broad and accepting. And in order to be accepted around the world, we need the president to go to Japan next and apologize for the two atomic bombs. Now, he's apologized across one-third of the globe, but there's still two-thirds of the globe to go. I think that in the next few months, we're going to beg the president, I mean the Messiah, I mean the chairman, the new chairman, Obama, to go to Germany and perhaps go to an SS cemetery and apologize to the Germans for taking away the flower of their youth 70 years ago in some misguided notion of liberation. Because this is a new world order where there are no borders. It's an America that transcends all borders and all history, transcends all languages and all cultures. And the least important culture on earth, of course, is the American culture. The least important race on the planet is the white race. And the important thing to remember is that it's a new world order under a new man who has brought new hope and new promise. And that's why I say it's time to put all of these thoughts aside. New York City, WOR, Leon, welcome to the Peaceful Nation.
It's a very big honor to talk to you, Dr. Savage. First of all, you're brilliant.
Well, no, first of all, I apologize for my 15 years of talking about borders, language, and culture, because after all, with the new chairman in the presidency, those days are over. The concept of borders, come on. Department of Homeland Security was set up specifically to make sure that there are no Minutemen.
Just the opposite.
That's right. That's right. We're living in the opposite world of a world of borders, language, and culture. We have a new government that's set up to dissolve borders, to polyglot the language, and to annihilate the culture.
I wanted to make one comment that your brilliant sarcasm makes me cry, laugh, and vomit simultaneously.
Oh, stop it. You mean you actually understood what I was doing, Leon? You must be one of the rare and the few.
Well, thank God I have a good IQ.
Leon, you know, I just did 30 minutes of something unique in radio, but it's because I can almost puke from what I'm listening to in the media. I'm at the verge of nausea every day when I watch these men getting on all fours braying in front of Obama. There's almost nothing left but pure sarcasm, for me anyway.
But I think in addition to Internacional, you should play, unfortunately, as you alluded to just before you spoke to me, something from the Machmo from Hitler. Because that,
well, we're not quite there yet. I don't think the American people quite understand that there are very grave similarities between the rise of the Austrian and the rise of Obama. They don't quite understand it yet. They don't understand how this was all carefully orchestrated, but for modern times and for a different audience than the Germans. That although the rallies were different, the results were the same. Although the end result was to turn Hitler into a messiah, the end result here is virtually the same thing for the sheeple out there who don't understand the danger they are in.
And fortunately, the few people who are left in the country who call in to you who do realize the tremendous threat that they have. You know, I'm very surprised that the governor of Texas didn't already make didn't already continue to secede from the union. I think a lot of...
Right. The next day, the very next day, the vermin in the media ran polls which said 75% of Texans oppose secession. How did they get that so fast? Who they ask, illegal aliens at labor stations in the gutter? Or they do polls amongst people looking for jobs in the gutter?
I mean, it's
unbelievable to me, Leon. Thanks for the call. Now, I was watching a... there's a couple of channels I'm addicted to on television. I admit I watch. I'm going blind from the internet and television. It's sad. I'm addicted. I can't stop it. But that's the way it is. It's horrible. Everything's blurry. And then I watch military history almost incessantly, and I watch History Channel almost incessantly. And last night on HDTV, I was bored. I watched a thing on the occult in the Third Reich under Hitler. That, you know, it's alleged that Hitler was a Christian. Excuse me, his henchmen were Christians, but you well know and I well know that they weren't. They had been born, of course, in Catholic nations or such, but they were all devout occultists, and they practiced the occult behind the scenes. Most Germans did not know that they were led by an occult maniac, Adolf Hitler, and were surrounded by Satanists. And to this day, they don't understand that they were surrounded by Satanists, nor do the American people themselves understand what was going on historically, because they don't teach any of this. They don't understand that most of the atrocities, not all of them, were carried out by the SS, who answered only to Hitler, separate from the Wehrmacht, which does not mean there were not atrocities conducted by the Wehrmacht, the German army, but it's important for you to understand this, to understand what was going on. These children were brainwashed in a Hitler youth from childhood on. Think about it. If a boy was born in 1920, he then fought in 38, 1939, 1940. The state had him for virtually his entire developmental life. They brainwashed the child, first in the Hitler Youth, then in another a program for the teenagers, then finally into the military itself. When I heard that Obama wanted to create a military unit or a special unit of children, a national service children, that will answer only to the White House, every nerve in my body went into overdrive. Do you remember that statement? Listen to it now if you don't. This was during the campaign. Guys, see if you can find that. It's very important for you to hear this. I can just say when you have it, whatever. I know I picked it out of the air. I don't expect you to have him. Listen to this, because this could be coming to a neighborhood near you. If you don't have it, you don't have it. But say you have it or don't. You're leaving me in the lurch here. Another 50 minutes, all right. Figure around 9 o'clock tonight I'll have it when I need it, when I'm passed out from exhaustion. Anyway, during the campaign, Obama gave himself away in many different ways. Reverend Wright was perhaps the most telling giveaway of who Obama is inside the head, between the ears, where it counts. You say it doesn't matter that a man sat in a church for 20 years and listened to vile anti-Americanism with a special twist of anti-whiteism. You say it doesn't matter. I say it does matter. I say he could have left at any time, and he didn't. And I warned you what was coming. And he also gave this speech. I want you to hear it again. Go ahead.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
A civilian national security force that's just as strong, just as well-funded as the U.S. military. That sounds like a little gentleman from Austria who wanted his own civilian security force, and he created it. It was called the Brown Shirts, and he funded it, and they fought for him, and they protected him. And they protected him not only from the political opponents, but from the military itself. And so, ladies and gentlemen, as I say, since this is the new way, since this is the new world order, since there's no stopping the tidal wave of lies, deceit, arrogance, and absolute un-Americanism emanating from the highest office, I think that it's time to get along and go along. And that's why I say today we're rechanging the show to the peaceful nation. Because the last thing we would want is to see me on a watch list of the Homeland Security or the FBI or the CIA. I want them to understand that I'm a team player, that I'm not a loose cannon, that I'll get along and I'll go along. And so, as I say, whatever the government wants of me, I'm willing to do. And I'm even willing to go so far as to myself offer several initiatives, and one of them would be this. Although over the years I've called for stronger borders and the deportation of illegal aliens, I think today I'm going to call for the relocation of all white people who have lived here for more than 50 years in order to give the newcomers from the South a chance, just for the sake of fairness and balance. We should force all whites over the age of 50 to leave the country, perhaps with their possessions, perhaps not, in order to give all of these newcomers from the South a chance, the newcomers who have put all the Democrats in power and have kept them there for these last 20 years. You see what I mean? It's time for them to appreciate the beauties of America, and it's time for those who've enjoyed this fair nation to move on. Time to pack up your kit bag and move along. Now it's time for the callers on the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255, Michael Savage. Oh, yes, there's a story on my website that I linked up from the failing San Francisco Chronicle, a newspaper that's losing $1.5 million a week, a million and a half a week. It's not their money. They certainly won't change their policies. They'd rather be out of business collecting crazy checks in the cafes of San Francisco than ever recognize the fact that they drove their newspaper to bankruptcy. So there's an article about bedbugs in San Francisco. Apparently there's a bedbug epidemic in the city, and it's not just limited to single-room occupancy hotels anymore. Oh, no, it's in various neighborhoods now. It's way out of the cheap, poor neighborhoods. The bedbugs have proliferated throughout San Francisco, but there's no mention of where they came from. It's as though the bedbugs were created by spontaneous creation. You've heard of spontaneous emission, and of course you've heard of spontaneous combustion, but you've not heard of spontaneous creation yet. But according to the liberal, bedbugs may have been created by spontaneous creation, created simply out of the air in order to make immigrants look bad. I'll be right back.
ideas need to be forward-looking and relevant. I felt like there was a lot of nostalgia for the good old days in the messaging. And, you know, it's great, but it doesn't draw people towards your cause. It's time for us to listen first, to learn a little bit, to upgrade our message a little bit, to not be nostalgic about the past because, you know, things do ebb and flow.
See, that's Jeb Bush, a brilliant member of the Bush family, and I'm following his advice. It's time to drop this nostalgia for the past, Reagan, borders, language, culture. Jeb knows which way the wind blows. After all, he's a weatherman himself. And although he espoused conservatism when it worked, he realizes it doesn't work anymore for the Bush family. And so now he's telling us the time for nostalgia is past, as did Lindsey Graham, another great, wonderful, patriotic, rock-ribbed American. And he said that the future of the Republican Party is not the message, but the man. He said we need to get the right people to run, not the right message. Not to stand for anything. Because if you stand for something, that unto itself is somewhat antiquated. The new American stands for nothing. The new American believes in nothing. The new American is nothing. And that is the future of America, nothingness. The important thing to remember is that there is no America. There is no man in America. There is no citizen in America. In the new America, there is no individual. And the Republicans of the past, well, it worked then when people were a bit more cracker-like. But today, what with the advent of the web and with Twittering, there is no need for a self. There is no need for a self-identity. There is no need for a nation. For without a self, there can be no nation. And since the selves have been dissolved into the whole, and now there is only internet think, there is no need for the individual. And the Republicans say that therefore we should evolve, drop the nostalgia. And that's why I see finally which way the wind blows. Listen now to the great Lindsey Graham in clip 3.
Country's center right, but I don't think I could win in Pennsylvania. I'm not moving to try. We need to get people who can embrace center right.
Why don't you try running in Manhattan with that accent? All right, turn him off. Run in Manhattan. Go give a few stump speeches in Manhattan. All right, let's see what else we have in the sound box here. How about Timothy Geithner and their position? Do you think that's good, them taking over, let's see, the banks, the financial industry, the auto industry? What's next? Well, it's what Chavez did. It's what Hitler did. It's what Mussolini did. And therefore, it's the way to go. It's this nostalgia about the free market. Let it go already. Let it go. Free market. I mean, that worked then when a bunch of crackers ran the country. But a new world order, which is run by China and Saudi Arabia, there's no need for this anymore. The important thing is to have upstanding men like Timothy Geithner giving billions of dollars to his friends on Wall Street in order to make certain that they can still have the lifestyle to which they've become accustomed. You certainly don't want the men who bankrupted Wall Street to go without, do you? No, so therefore what you do is you make certain that you have senators like Dianne Feinstein on various committees where she can say, I want $50 billion for the FDIC because my husband has certain real estate interests which will benefit from it, which is actually very good for America. Because if my husband, Dick Blum, benefits from my actions, that's good for America because that creates jobs. If he gets the houses that the FDIC is trying to give away for nothing, and if Dick Blum can make, well, it doesn't matter what he makes. Think of all the jobs, the painters, the electricians, and the plumbers that will be employed in the Bay Area once my houses and fixes them up. Not himself. He himself can't run a wire. He can't run a pipe. But he hires all of the, well, they're certainly, you can call them Americans, but they're workers. They're not American workers. Most of them come from south of the border because they work for less. Instead of working for $30 an hour, they work for $10 an hour. And that way there's more profit for Dick. And you understand when Dick makes more profit, it's good for America. And that's why I say in the new America, we shouldn't even look too closely at senators like Feinstein because they're only doing the right thing. This is the American way. If you want to know what the free market is, it means that Dianne Feinstein, the senator from wherever she's from, the senator from Shanghai, if Dianne Feinstein gets to appropriate $50 billion of taxpayer money so that her family can profit by it, the important thing to remember is that this reflects what the free market really is, which is grab what you can until you get caught and then deny, deny, deny. That's the free market. according to the new administration. And that's the important thing. And although Nancy Pelosi is allegedly the richest woman in Congress, the important thing to know is that she talks about the poor and the immigrant and the downtrodden. And that's what's important. It's not that she actually helps them. It's that she makes them feel good. That she makes the poor and the downtrodden and the illegal feel like they're Americans. And by making them feel like they're Americans, she does a lot of good for America. And that's what's important. It's not what happens, but what is said and how it makes people feel. And take Janet Napolitano, perhaps one of the most brilliant minds ever seen in the history of the human race, which is why the all-seeing, all-knowing Swami Obama picked her. He picked her because she was such a brilliant governor. When she was a governor, the borders were locked down so that no drugs could come over the border. No guns came through that border. Although they're saying the guns are coming from America, that just began. Well, it didn't just begin. The guns were flooding into Mexico while Bush was president because he wanted guns to go to the gangs in Mexico, while Obama doesn't want the guns. Now, although Napolitano was the governor while the guns were going to Mexico, she couldn't do anything about it because she worked for the fascist Bush. But now that she's Department of Homeland Security Secretary, she doesn't have to stop the flow of guns. She's got to stop the returning Army veterans from using guns in any way that's not permitted. And that's the important thing. And you got to understand that those people with abortion give it up already. Let it go. That's an old thing. It got some people elected back in the 90s. But that abortion thing is over. Young girls today, they want to have fun. Young girls today just want to party. Today, young girls want to go to a nightclub and have open sex on the floor of the nightclub and put it on YouTube. And if they should get pregnant, they want to throw it in a dumpster. That's the new America. No self, no self-respect, no nation, no borders, no language, no culture. Now that's the future. That's the future of American politics.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. Now, for the aficionados of this program who have loyally listened to me for a number of years, some of you going back 15 years, if you heard the first hour of this show, some would consider it in the top 5 hours I've ever done. I would consider it a tour de force. The pain inside me had reached such a level. The discontent with the lies that I am seeing, the vermin in the media, have never in my life appeared more bug-like than they have in the last several months. The worship of the American media, the disconnect between the people of America, the media, and the government has never been greater. And so for one straight hour, I gave you sarcasm, satire, whatever you want to call it, still permitted in America, heard usually only from left-wingers, but I gave it to you from the other side for one straight hour, and I recommend that you listen to it if you can catch it somewhere else. But I realized at the end of it, when my producer, Beowulf, sent me this, that although I thought it was all spontaneous and I made it up as I was going along and some of the lines were just, I thought, whizzy and good, I am really a product of my education. I'm a product not only of my education, I mean all my reading, all my travels, all my interchanges with people, whether it be in school, whether it be outside of school, whether it be religious trainings. I'm a sum total of it all. But one of the seminal books that I grew up on was called 1984 by George Orwell, a time when Big Brother ruled a nation and everyone had to worship Big Brother. And anyone who didn't worship Big Brother was an enemy of the state. And I realized that we have now arrived in that frightening world that George Orwell feared would emerge. And here is how the book ends. It's one paragraph. He gazed up at the enormous face. 40 years it had taken him to learn what kind of smile was hidden beneath the dark mustache. Oh, cruel, needless misunderstanding. Oh, stubborn, self-willed exile from the loving breast. Two gin-scented tears trickled down the sides of his nose. But it was all right. Everything was all right. The struggle was finished. He had won the victory over himself. He loved Big Brother. It's chilling, but that's where we are. When you recognize that a hack who worked for the Democrats, got himself a job in the media, who I've called a puffball for years, is now the most beloved spokesmouth for the Obamas, along with the man who urinates on himself on MSLGBT, you understand where we have come, that a once great iconic company like NBC, a great company like NBC, could fall to the level of simply being an arm of the government and not recognize that the people know this, unto itself means that we've moved into the world of Big Brother. I read just now that a new story came out. Nancy Pelosi said that the House Democrats are going to demand $94.2 billion more right now in additional emergency funds. That's right. They've robbed you of $1 trillion thus far, given it to their friends and cronies. They have not created so much as, I know, 1,000 new jobs. I don't know where the jobs are. Obama promised us 3 million jobs. I don't think he's created any. But they've taken $1 trillion of our money. We don't know where it went. They won't disclose who's gotten it. The House Democrats just now announced that they're going to seek passage in coming weeks of a $94.2 billion in additional money, including $2 billion more to prepare for an influenza pandemic. There is not a crisis that doesn't appear that does not permit these greedy Democrats from appropriating money from you. There it is. $94 billion more demanded by Nancy Pelosi. And there's no opposition to it. There is no opposition whatsoever. The Republican Party disappeared a long time ago. Not because their politics were wrong for America, but because they had no politics. The Republicans were best represented, in fact, by the prostitute Arlen Specter. To me, Arlen Specter had long represented what the Republican Party had become. Arlen Specter, Olympia Snow, and the others, in fact, were really the voice of the Republican Party. They were not moderates. They were Democrat lights, as somebody would put it. But the fact of the matter is, Arlen Specter, as you well know, was long a prostitute. I had a story up last week that was done many years ago about Arlen Specter back in the day when he was a young DA and a Democrat at that, when he helped ferret the murderer Ira Einhorn out of America by arguing for a lower bail and helping get him out of the country. Now, how this man ever became a senator is beyond me. Well, actually, I know how he did, because in Pennsylvania, as in most states, it's all machine politics. And so here we are today. Now, machine politics have worked up until now, by and large, for better or for worse, despite the imperfections of the two-party system. The country has been a great nation until now. But something happened. Something happened along the way that destroyed the two-party system. I can't define it. It's hard to define. It's hard to put your finger on it. But here we are. We fundamentally have a one-party system in the United States of America, and it is increasingly a dictatorship. It's a dictatorship of a single man who has been made into the Messiah by the vermin in the media, who refuse to question or challenge him in any way. In fact, I noticed something interesting the other night on CNN. It was yesterday in passing. I watched TV for a few minutes while having lunch alone on a rainy day. And there was, I don't remember her name, pardon me. It was some panel or other being run by Howard Kurtz, whoever he may be. I don't know who he is. I've seen him. He has a sneer. He's from the Washington Post, I think. A horrible human being. You could see he's the type whose wife left him a long time ago, or should have left him a long time ago. The type whose children probably gave themselves away. On the panel was a black lady, a young black lady, a reporter, who astonishingly said, or tried to interrupt Howard Kurtz several times when she said, but are you aware that Obama's ratings are the lowest of any of the past X number of presidents in the number of years? He's only next to Bill Clinton in terms of the first 100 days. And immediately Howard Kurtz, the propagandist, cut her off and said, yeah, but his numbers are still high. Let's move on. She was astonished. And once again, I saw what's going on. Once again, I saw that when a black or a Hispanic or an Asian dares speak out against the party politics of the time, they are no longer useful to the party. And they're going to find out very soon that although they have been ushered into various areas and they think that they're accepted, they're not accepted. And if they start using any independence of thought, they're going to find out pretty soon which way the wind blows. 1-800-449-8255 phone number. MichaelSavage.com. I would like to have your calls on various topics, particularly what my sarcasm projected in the last hour. New York City, Stuart, line one from WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mike, in line with your comments, I'd like to volunteer to be the first white male over 50 to leave the country, but not only leave the country, but give away all of my possessions that I've worked hard for to the first illegal family that comes forward.
Well, you should, Stuart, because you've had a good number of years in America, haven't you?
It's been enough.
And in a certain way, if you think about it, you stole it from the descendants of the Aztecs. In a strange way, all those years you were working, whatever you may have been doing, you really were taking it from the Aztecs in a certain way.
I didn't deserve it in the first place.
Well, let's not be abstract. I mean, you actually extracted the gold that you hoarded from the Aztecs themselves.
That's a nice way of saying I stole it. Let's call a spade.
Well, I wouldn't be that harsh because this is now the peaceful nation. I'm not as abrupt as I was last week.
Extracted, found.
Now, let me ask, speaking of gold, when you are asked to leave America, do you happen to have any gold teeth?
No.
I mean, any gold fillings, perhaps?
There must be a watch I have laying around somewhere.
Well, I would think that the government should be able to ask you to contribute any gold fillings you have, because this could help balance the budget. There's no better way to make certain that the newcomers are comfortable in this country than to make certain that the whites who are being asked to leave behind all of their gold, including that in their teeth. And by the way, Stuart, I really think that you should eschew normal airline or travel of that kind, because the government said that they have a lot of rolling stock that's empty right now, and that they're going to be using this rolling stock to transport the people, because it's actually kind of invigorating for their health to be exposed to the elements.
One other thing, Mike, despite the fact that I'm a white male and therefore the lowest rung on the totem pole and at the end of the line, I'm going to give my spot away to an illegal. I don't deserve even
that. It's only fair. It's only fair that an illegal alien get your possessions. Well, whether it comes to that or not is debatable, but what is certain to come is that what we see going on in Venezuela will happen in America unless the Messiah is exposed for what he is. Do you know that it is now illegal for anyone in Venezuela to own more than one house? Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Anybody who owns more than one house is considered a hoarder and an enemy of the state. And just as the Jews have been driven out of Venezuela, property owners have been flooding out of Venezuela. Did you know that it's also illegal to remove more than $4,000 a year from a bank in Venezuela? And that's to make certain that Father Chavez can appropriate the money for his needs for a better nation. And since our great leader and Chavez got along so greatly, what was that ghetto thing they did with the fists? What's that called, Stuart? You're from New York.
What is what? Oh,
you know,
right
when you when,
on, right on.
When they tap the fists, what's that called?
That's a brother to brother. White males need not bother.
I see. So it was a signal between Obama and Chavez that although they can't say it quite yet, they're blood brothers in some way?
Not even subtle. Oh, they're brothers of the first degree.
And Obama took that book of blaming America for robbing everyone in South America, not talking, of course, about the tin pot dictators nor the folks who cut hearts out and threw the hearts down the Aztec monuments. None of that was discussed. It was all because the white man grew rubber in Brazil.
Mike, I'm taking it one step further. Not only am I giving everything up and headed to Mexico, I want them to experiment on me to see if they can use me to find a cure to swine flu. I think that.
Well, you know, that's a very, very, very noble gesture of yours. You mean you would actually volunteer to live inside a pig pen?
Hey, I've always wanted to, and it sounds like...
You know, that's a nice idea, because, look, you've had a number of good years here in America, right, Stuart?
Look, it's enough. I've lived...
It's
well enough.
You know, yeah, that's right. And the last year should be spent in medical research.
What more could I do for my fellow man? I mean,
that's right. You know, it's ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for Obama.
That's exactly what I'm trying
to. Ask not what Obama can do for you, but what you can do for Obama.
I want my tax money to go to him.
Ein Volk, ein Reich, ein Obama. That's the important thing to remember in any language. Ein Volk, ein Reich, ein Obama. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We are talking about Big Brother and the fact that Obama has become the symbol of Big Brother, and where it ends, nobody knows. I have a small library that I keep in my radio studio, and one of the books I keep is Lawrence Reese's book, R-E-E-S, The Nazis, A Warning from History, a companion to the prize-winning History Channel BBC documentary, The Nazis, A Warning from History. Now, this book was published a number of years ago. I don't even think it could be published today, 1997. It may as well have been 1947. But there's a chapter with a paragraph or two that I keep posted. And I just opened it to that chapter right now, Helped into Power, How Hitler Was Helped into Power and What Happened After He Was Elected. And here is a man who was a member of a different party. A man who was a member of the opposition, the German Socialist Party. And he said his party believed that since Hitler was now the legally chosen chancellor, then they were the legal opposition, this party, and they could carry on as if in a normal, stable democracy. Quote, we hadn't fully realized what it would mean, says Herfelder. We believed that we could still control him through parliament. Total lunacy, close quote. As for the Communist Party, their attitude to the news of Hitler's chancellorship was scarcely a call to world revolution. One says, the Communist Party line to which I still belong was that it didn't matter if Hitler gets the power. That's good. He'll soon have proved himself incompetent, and then it's our turn. For some extraordinary reason, they didn't realize that he was going to change the law once he came to power. What you don't know is I hear many, many Republicans kind of laughing in the dark, saying, oh, well, he's going to prove about Obama. He's going to prove himself to be incompetent, and then it's going to be our turn. It's history repeating itself all over again. What you don't understand is that the danger is here right now, that when crises are happening and people say that they have the wisdom and the answer and they can bring salvation to everybody, they usually become very popular. And Hitler, remember, came to power legally within the existing constitutional system. And, of course, he eventually swept democracy itself away. Now, Obama doesn't have to sweep democracy away. He doesn't have to do it at all. When you have quisling prostitutes like Arlen Specter, when you have vermin degenerate comedians like Al Franken moving over to your side and you have a supermajority, you virtually have a dictatorship. So it doesn't matter whether or not there's an opposition. They are fundamentally not there. And so therefore we are now living in a dictatorship. And that's why I told you at the beginning of the show, well over 90 minutes ago, or about 90 minutes ago, that I'm changing my tune. I'm going to be along and get along. I'm going to go along and be one of you. I want to fit in to the New World Order. I want to worship Big Brother. I want Homeland Security and the CIA and the FBI to know that I'm no longer a threat to the world order. I no longer believe in borders. In fact, I think that borders are a part of the past. I believe that English, while an interesting language, an archaic language at that, the new language of America should be somewhat of a Meso-Latino language. In fact, the national anthem itself must go because it's rather, it bludgeons you with sort of a jingoism. And I think it's time to replace it with the Internacional. And I'm going to play it now, right now on the Savage Nation, because that is the new theme of America. is the Peaceful Nation. Phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We just learned that Obama will announce the court nominee by the end of the week, and we're hoping that it's Janet Napolitano, because we know she has a body of brilliant writings. We haven't found them yet, but we know somewhere there exists a body of brilliant writings by Janet Napolitano that we have yet to discover. She is currently running the Homeland Security Department into the ground, attacking patriotic Americans, doing nothing to stop the swine flu epidemic, and yet she might be the next Supreme Court jurist. After all, she's qualified because she's a woman and she does what Obama wants. What more can you want but a compliant woman? And she won't exactly wear an apron on the Supreme Court. She'll wear a robe like the rest of them. But she will be a good wife to the new president, in essence, a political wife to the president's ambitions. And if only they can speed the process up, or they could do what FDR tried to do, which is increase the number of justices until finally they have the majority that they need. That's not enough to pack liberals on the Supreme Court. The important thing is to pack only liberals on the Supreme Court. Oh, you might leave one conservative on just as a kind of a museum piece. Sort of make the Supreme Court 20 members. In fact, I think he should select the Supreme Court justice from the media itself. I think that he should go out and pick somebody from MSNBC to be on the Supreme Court. Perhaps the man who urinates on himself with big glasses. Or the very loyal soldier, Puffball, could be a Supreme Court nominee. Well, no, wait a minute. They are women. I'm sorry. Yes, they could qualify as women. So therefore, they could qualify as minorities as well. Although they're white and they're male in appearance, their politics are that of women and minorities. So therefore, they do qualify in that regard. And so therefore, he could select one of those two people on the Supreme Court. Doesn't matter that they have no law background. That doesn't matter under Obama. What do qualifications have to do with anything under Obama? After all, he took Timothy Geithner, who's unqualified. He's the Treasury Secretary, ripping off the taxpayer and getting away with it. Now, that's a qualification. Doesn't matter that he knows how to balance the books or run a business. What's important is he knows how to rip off the taxpayer and not get caught. That's the qualification under Obama. Today I watched a show on TV. I don't know what channel it was. I think it was the sock puppet Neil Cavuto. I don't remember. And he's interviewing some Obamaite who's on the auto task force. And the question, the pregnant question that the sock puppet Cavuto failed to ask once, he didn't say once to this man, have you ever run a business? Not once did he say to this man, did you start a business? Did you run a business? Do you know how to run a business? What's your business background? Not once did the sock puppet for Fox News, Neil Cavuto, ask that question. Instead, the nice guy Neil Cavuto said to him, you know, you look like a nice guy. You wouldn't have done anything like what we heard, would you? I can't imagine a nice guy like you doing that. And I said to myself, oh, my God, this is what passes for journalism today? It's unbelievable to me. So that's why I say I may be through with politics at the end of today and only do family stories and only play rock and roll, because there's no point in my doing politics in the age of Big Brother. He is beloved by everyone. Now, it is true that the Gallup poll has shown that he's the second least popular president in modern history at the first 100 days. But that's because Gallup, although it's been a loyal arm of the liberal establishment for many years, has probably been taken over by the right wingers that Janet Napolitano was warned us against. I wouldn't be surprised if once Homeland Security and the FBI get through looking into it, if Gallup, the Gallup organization, has not been somehow penetrated by former Army veterans or anti-abortion people or people who believe in borders, language, and culture. And once they uncover this conspiracy to destroy a once great polling organization, the Gallup poll, you will see that Big Brother's ratings will make him number one throughout all time, greater than any president in history. You'll find out that the Gallup poll was just, it was a right-wing lunacy, you know. That's the important thing to know, is that it was a fraudulent poll. And so you shouldn't look into anything that Gallup says. It's unreliable. Any poll that shows you that Obama is not more popular than anyone is out of touch with reality. Because all you got to do is turn on MSLGBT and you'll find out how popular he really is. That's the important thing. It's perception, not reality. Because in this world that we live in, perception is reality. Joe in Ohio, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mike. Hey. You know, for the peaceful nation, I'd like to add a suggestion. I think you should stop the yelling, because the yelling does offend people. It's a little bit too aggressive. Maybe you can come across and be a little bit more passive.
I'm trying to do that. In fact, I'm going to go have a female sex hormone injection to cut down on the testosterone overload.
That would be good. How about if maybe you can start drinking decaf coffee? Because that'll also calm me down a little bit.
Well, I can go further than that. I mean, I can have some kind of soya drink that increases the amount of female hormones in my body, because the soya contains starter compounds for female hormones, you know, and it'll make a man more mellow. You know,
and maybe you could put soy cheese on your pizza, maybe light beer.
Oh, I cut out real cheese a long time ago. I switched to soy cheese a while ago because it's more natural. It's in keeping with the earth. It's less cruel. It's less cruel cheese.
Okay, and if we're swinging...
You see, if you eat less cruel food, you'll become less of a right winger. The important thing is to get rid of caffeine, certainly alcohol. I think the state should require that all right wingers smoke marijuana at least once a day. That they should go to a marijuana center and be forced to ingest a joint a day to mellow them and make them kind of nicer, so they can listen to HBO at night and enjoy it.
How about no more red meat? Because the red...
Oh, absolutely. Well, red meat is polluting the planet. There's no question about it, because you know, you think about the energy used to raise those the cows, and think of the suffering of the cow. Absolutely, no red, no meat at all. No animal products, in fact. I think the vegetables themselves need to be eliminated, because vegetables feel too. You know, vegetables hurt. You think corn wants to be picked from the field, Joe?
Mike, broccoli screams. I hear it when I cut.
I know, I hear them. Every time I look at broccoli in a soup, I know it's yelling at me, help, help, get me out of the soup.
Maybe you could even start with a small dose of pharmaceuticals. Forget that health book. What was the health book, Healing Children Naturally?
I think that should be burned. I think that all copies of my book should be burned. I think the government should force the burning of all Savage books, because they've only made people upset. I mean, look, think about it. The Savage Nation, The Enemy Within, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, The Political Zoo. These books have really, really made people nervous. It's made them think about things that they shouldn't be thinking about in the New World Order. Because if you're going to sing the Internationale, where there are no borders, there is no language, there is no culture, and there is no self, and there is no liberty, and there is no individual, the idea of borders, language, and culture is a threat to the New World Order. I believe everyone who owns such a book should turn them into a local police station, and they should be burned in a pyre.
And let's stop the last printing of Psychological Nudity, because...
Wait a minute, but that's not a political book, Psychological Nudity.
Mike, that makes us happy, and that makes us feel good about ourselves, and we don't really...
Well, no, I do see what you mean. In other words, the book of my family's stories of growing up as poor immigrants and working their way up without accepting welfare or a nickel from the government, that is threatening. You notice, to show men who would rather throw themselves off a fire escape than take a nickel of welfare is actually anti-Obama. Because, after all, these are government jobs. The only jobs he's created are in government. How many jobs were created to work for Barney Frank, do you think? I mean, has he created any jobs other than people who carry Barney Frank's belongings?
Well, he did employ some dressmakers, didn't he?
Hey, does anyone have an answer to this question? And this is a very serious question. I read in passing about 3 weeks ago that Obama is the first president in history to have a personal aide living with him in the White House, a 20-something-year-old guy, who he said reminds him of the kid brother he never had. Does anyone know what that man's name is and what he does for Obama?
Don't know about that, Mike.
How come that's not published much? Wouldn't it be a big story if a president has a personal aide and that no one ever had one before? A personal assistant? In the past, the personal assistant was usually a member of the Marine Guard, so far as I can tell. You see, well, I'm sorry, I'm asking too many questions, And I do worship Big Brother, and I do want Big Brother to love me. I want Big Brother to love me because I love Big Brother. Don't you, Joe? Do you love Big Brother?
I do, and I just got home, and when I turned the radio on and I heard the new national anthem,
Yeah, didn't you feel good hearing the communist national anthem? Because that eliminates the jingoistic national anthem of America that you grew up on.
It was kind of nice that I didn't hear any words. I didn't understand the language. I didn't understand the words. But the music certainly made me feel warm and squishy inside.
Well, that's because it doesn't identify with any single nation, Joe. When you have Ben Bernanke of the Federal Reserve and Tim Geithner of the Treasury, who fundamentally are internationalist bankers running our treasury into the ground, stealing as much taxpayer money as they want without answering to anybody, you must understand that we are no longer living in a sovereign nation. And that is because sovereign nations are a threat to the New World Order. And, of course, what follows from that, Joe, is that sovereign individuals are even a greater threat than sovereign nations. Once the sovereignty of a nation goes, the sovereignty or identity of an individual must go next. Now, this is too advanced right now. Aide's name is Reggie Love. Does anyone know who Reggie Love is and what he does in the White House for Obama? Can anyone answer why a president needs a personal assistant and what a personal assistant does? Think about it and get back to me.
Savage.
Playing the old communist national anthem because we think that it was prescient in its sentiments, in that it's a world without borders, a world without a single language, a world without a cultural identity. And so we are, again, reaching out to the administration of Big Brother to make him understand that we see the world the way he does. Here's a news article, 44 killed in attack on wedding ceremony in Turkey. 45 people killed, wounded 20 others. Two girls survived after the bodies of slain friends fell on top of them during the onslaught. As you well know, the administration has just sold advanced weapon systems to the Turks because Israel is no longer of any importance to this administration. That's a right-wing holdover, you know, Israel protecting the oil, our best friend in the Middle East, bah, humbug. Israel's an egg that needs to be broken for the New World Order, and the New World Order requires that we have an alliance with Turkey and with Iran. Certainly nothing to do with Israel. Certainly nothing to do with Egypt. Certainly very, very little in the future to do with Saudi Arabia. The new alliance is between the U.S. and Iran. The Obama administration has decided to embrace Ahmadinejad rather than to erase Ahmadinejad. While there was talk of erasing Ahmadinejad, Obama is now talking about embracing Ahmadinejad because he knows which way the wind blows. And as you well know, Obama has even lent his slogan of hope to Ahmadinejad, who was using it for his reelection campaign in Iran. And if the slogan worked for Obama, why shouldn't it work for Ahmadinejad in Iran? If the words hope and change can sway so many brilliant Americans, why should it not sway the Iranians? And so, as I say, while there was some talk for a number of years under Bush about getting rid of Ahmadinejad, those days are over. Right now, as you well know, Obama has decided to sell advanced weapon systems to Turkey, who is now sharing them with Hezbollah in Lebanon, because this is the new emerging order in the world. The new axis is the United States plus Iran, plus other Muslim allies, and the old alliances are gone, over, done with. And that's what you wanted. When you wanted change, you got change. When you wanted hope, you got hope. You didn't know what you were hoping for, but you got it. And you weren't told what kind of change there would be any more than you're told what progress means by progressives. Progressives say they want progress, but they don't define it. Well, now you're finding out what they mean by it, which is robbing from the earner to give to the grifter, robbing from the producer to give to the grifter, robbing from the citizen to give to the non-citizen, stealing your citizenship to give it to the non-citizen. New York City, WOR, Ed, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I think we should leave Iraq and Afghanistan immediately, and all returning GI should be arrested.
Well, I think that they, if not arrested, they certainly should be investigated. Because any man who's been trained to use weapons of any kind is a potential threat to Big Brother.
well, anybody that's ethnic also should be, you know, let go only because of their social status, the reason why they joined the military.
No, no. Any military man coming back from a theater of war is already on a watch list from Homeland Security. But I think they need to be deprogrammed in some way, perhaps in a temporary re-education camp, maybe an old Indian reservation. I think that all returning Army veterans should be put into an Indian reservation for several months in order to be turned into useful citizens again, and to certainly be certain that they're not plotting any kind of threat to Big Brother. Don't you, Ed?
Once they legalize 25 million illegals, there won't be no jobs for them, so it's preemptive.
That's right. Well, once 25 million illegals are granted citizenship, it's the end of America. It's over. Because they will perennially vote for a socialist government. That's what they had in Mexico, so why wouldn't they want it here? In other words, if a government, the reason they left Mexico is because there was nothing there for them. But if a government says, come here, we'll give you everything for nothing, wouldn't you vote for that government? If a government says, come here, we'll give you free medical, free education, free dental, free legal, we'll give you free housing because we got too many houses, we might even give you a free car because GM doesn't know what to do with them, wouldn't you vote for a government like that? Why would you want to go back to any country that makes you basically live in a mud hut where you had nothing because it was stolen by the oligarchs? Here, the oligarchs steal from those who created it and give it to you. Why would you go back to a country where the oligarchs stole it only for themselves? It's a different form of oligarchy. It's a more, well, democratic oligarchy when you think about it. When you actually think about it, it's actually nice to take from those who work and give to those who don't. You know, that way you balance things out. All right. What do you want to do on the Savage Nation? I've given you the news. Now they stole that from me on Headline News. For 15 years, I used news, views, and reviews. Now the schmucks on Headline News are using, we have more news and reviews for you any minute. You know how many more of my things are? Every day, it's beautiful to see. Like the Savage Nation became the Raiders Nation, became this nation, that nation. Everyone's the nation, but I don't exist. They all listen to the show. They all steal my ideas, but I don't exist. Only they exist. It's beautiful. It's a great compliment, by the way. The more they don't talk about me, the more I know I'm getting to them. So, play Hare Krishna now. I really need to hear Hare Krishna in order to get mellow and third worldy. I need to get into a third world frame of mind. Oh, that's so much better. I read that Big Brother's education ministry is seeking to prove that the nation was founded not by Christians who were following Judeo-Christian thoughts and ideas, but actually it could be that America was founded on Hindu philosophy, Hindu and Buddhist philosophy. In fact, most of the Buddhists in America who know nothing about Buddhism, the converts, I mean, the former, you know, hippie liberals who are all, they like to put their hands in front of their bodies when they go into Asian restaurants and ask for a glass of water or a napkin. They think that makes them a Buddhist. And they bow to the owner who looks at them like they're insane. They actually believe that the pilgrims were not actually from England. There is some proof emerging from the Department of Education that the pilgrims actually were on a long journey from the Bay of Bengal. They stopped in England, it's true, for a while, and they donned English costumes. But in fact, the pilgrims were Hindus. And so this idea that we're a Judeo-Christian nation also has to be rethought. In the new re-education camp of Big Brother, everything is on the table. You thought that there was a free market? It's free for Dianne Feinstein and the bankers of Wall Street. You thought the country was built on Christian values? You're wrong. There are no Christian values. There may not even be a Christianity. That could be a fantasy also. And so forth and so on. He had won the victory over himself. He loved Big Brother. Read the last paragraph of George Orwell's 1984 and weep in your gin.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, here's what I've been talking about today on The Savage Nation. One, the anti-Semitism of Hugo Chavez. You may not know this, but there's an exodus of Jews coming out of Venezuela. Jews are fleeing the country en masse since Hugo Chavez, who is sounding more and more like Hitler in Spanish, took over. Yet the midstream media says nothing. Sean Penn goes there and salivates over this anti-Semite. The last days of the newspapers, another paper, the Boston Globe, about to fall. Management giving the government 60 days notice of its intention to shut down. Do you think newspapers are really dead in America, or could a conservative newspaper survive? Believe it or not, Napolitano, the woman who put out that hateful memo on conservatives in America, military vets in particular, being potential terrorists, is now being talked about as a Supreme Court nominee. Yes, that's right. And who did she leak it to? None other than Chris Walachensky, Chris Wallace, the son of Meatloaf. And then, of course, over the weekend, there was talk of conservative nostalgia. Jeb Bush said that conservatives should no longer be nostalgic about the past. Today's so-called Republican Senator Lindsey Graham said that the Republican Party has to be broadened. It seems that there's an all-out assault on conservatism. Republican left-wingers are taking the party to the left and right off a cliff. A party without a constituency. I saw Senator Lindsey Graham, a so-called Republican from South Carolina, on Fox News Network, supposedly to talk about the problems of the Republican Party. He said that the problem wasn't center-right politics that was causing the Republicans problems. The problem was finding good candidates to run. And he said that was the only reason Republicans are doing poorly. I suppose it only makes sense to the senator like Lindsey Graham, who sold out conservative values on immigration and virtually every other issue, could make a statement like that. Graham and most other Republicans have become the de facto leftist party in America. The Democrats now represent the neo-Marxist wing of America. Did you hear what I just said? There is no conservative party. There is no right party. There is a... There is a Republican Party, which is the, let us say, leftist party. And then there's the Democrat Party, which is the neo-socialist and neo-Marxist party of today. The fact is that it is all about center-right politics as to why Republicans are failing. Because the American people are a center-right people. The reason Republicans have been so unsuccessful in recent elections is not because they haven't had good candidates. It's because the candidates reflect their movement away from the center to the center left. The party has abandoned conservatives who now have no representation in Washington, D.C. Senator Graham said that finding good candidates is the problem. The truth is that if you had real conservative positions and you're willing to stand up for them, Republicans would have no shortage of candidates or voters. But Republicans have taken the party to the left while trying to pretend they represent conservative values. That's why they have met with disaster after disaster. The liberals they're trying to become don't believe them. The conservatives they have deserted don't follow them. They become a party without a constituency. There are a few good men left in the party, and I'll name them. Senator Inhofe of Oklahoma, Senator DeMint of South Carolina, Senator Sessions of Alabama, and a few others. But they have been drowned out by leftist Republicans. The sooner real conservatives break with the Graham crackers of the political scene, the sooner conservatives will have real representation on a national level, for better or for worse. The last days of the newspapers. The management of the Boston Globe has given notice, as required under federal law, that it intends to shut down operations. Boston Globe? Boston Globe had $50 million in operating losses in 08. That's $1 million a week. And it projects it will lose $85 million this year. That's over $1.5 million a week. It's a familiar story. A leftist newspaper like the Boston Globe, which is owned by the old York Times, sees declining circulation and revenue because it refuses to understand that Americans are fed up with their neo-Marxist papers. Sure, ads are down, but it's the readership that's really down and out. That's why the Rocky Mountain News went under. It's why the Seattle Post-Intelligencer stopped publishing. It's why the San Francisco Chronicle said they will go under if they can't make drastic cuts. It's the politics of these papers, stupid. Journalists live in an increasingly insular world that is completely at odds with the average newspaper buyer. That's why USA Today, the Old York Times, the LA Times, Washington Post are all seeing meltdowns in circulation. The only major newspaper that has seen an increase is the Wall Street Journal. Why? Well, it has a conservative editorial page and it's business oriented. And what's the reaction of the government? To let them be victims of their own stupid business decisions? Oh no, the left-wing government wants to fuel their stupidity. So-called Senator Benjamin Cardin of Maryland has introduced the Newspaper Revitalization Act, which would nationalize the newspapers, prohibit them from making political endorsements, and effectively give Obama control of the media. It would take us right into the old Soviet Union's control of the media. If American newspapers want to survive, they will reject the hand of big government and follow successful models such as the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Times, which actually understand that their readers don't want illegal immigration, nor gay marriage, nor affirmative action shoved down their throat 24/7. If they become a populist voice of the people, the newspapers can survive. If they continue to become even more of a mouthpiece for Obama and the radical neo-socialist agenda, their fates are sealed. But we've talked enough about this. Let's lighten things up a little here. Here is James Herson with the latest hijinks going on in Hollywood. James, welcome.
Thanks, Michael, for having me on. Michael Douglas and Oliver Stone are first up. You know what? They're heading back to Wall Street. Remember that greasy, greedy Gordon Gekko? Well, he's coming back. It was in the late 80s, and Michael Douglas intoned the words, "Greed is good," with a smirk and that slicked back hair, and he won an Oscar for that. Well, now Douglas and Oliver Stone want to do a sequel to the movie Wall Street. And you know, these original titles that the Hollywood executives come up with, they now have a title, Wall Street 2, scheduled to start shooting this summer. A 20th Century Fox spokesman whose name, get this, is Greg Brilliant. I mean, what a great name in Hollywood, Greg Brilliant. Well, he said that the new storyline is literally ripped from today's headlines. He also said it's going to be very big and very cool, Greg Brilliant. Now, with the left in Hollywood and on Capitol Hill declaring capitalism as dead, expect Oliver Stone and Wall Street 2 to pave the way for more government takeovers of business. Next up, Madonna. She wants to adopt another child, she says, as an orphan. But over in Malawi, a dad has popped up, and he says, "She's my daughter." His name is James Kimbewa, and he wrote a letter to lawyers asking for an injunction against Madonna adopting his 3-year-old daughter, Mercy. Kimbewa walked out on the baby's mother when she was pregnant, and Mercy has been living in an orphanage due to her mom's passing. Now, Madonna filed an appeal of a judge's ruling. The rule was that she couldn't legally adopt the baby. But she's got Mercy's grandmother and uncle on her side. But the father says, "Hey, Madonna has millions of dollars, but that doesn't make her a good mother." The father says parental love is more than money. And he slammed the material girl, asking this question: "How can a woman of 50 dance around naked on stage?" He said, "I wouldn't want my daughter to grow up like that."
Ha ha.
Me neither. Hugh Jackman, no trip to Mexico City, Michael. Why? Because even superheroes are scared of the swine flu. 20th Century Fox canceled a Mexico City premiere of Wolverine for right now, and studio execs said they weren't only concerned about their star, Jackman, but they said they would never send anyone into harm's way. You know, Jackman was the only Wolverine cast member that was set to attend this Mexico City premiere. And meanwhile, the Today Show cast, Matt, Meredith, Al, and Ann, were scheduled to go to San Antonio, Texas, and Key West, Florida, and they've canceled that trip also due to swine flu concerns. But you know what was probably even scarier to the Today Show cast? The Texas trip was going to include an interview with the former First Lady, Laura Bush. Jessica Biel. Now, she's a real pretty, attractive actress. But here's the question. Does going topless pay off? Because this actress and girlfriend of Justin Timberlake, Jessica Biel, wanted to jumpstart her acting career. She thought taking her clothes off would help her latest film, Powder Blue, but going topless apparently didn't impress the execs at Speakeasy Releasing because now the Biel movie is going straight to DVD. So others in Hollywood who want to get ahead have come up with a novel new way to propel their movie star status. It's called acting.
My dog Teddy could do better than that.
Elizabeth Edwards is in the news. John Edwards' wife has spoken out on her husband's affair. You know, the former senator and Democrat presidential candidate, John Edwards, who's been nowhere to be seen since he went public with his affair with a Hollywood video producer. His wife has been silent on her husband's broken vows that resulted in an out-of-wedlock baby girl. But now, Elizabeth's selling a new book. It's called Reliance. And she writes about her reaction to the news of her husband's affair. She says it made her vomit in the bathroom. You know what? Many Americans who supported Edwards' bid to be president had the exact same reaction. Thanks, Michael, for having me on, and thanks for all you do for the country.
Hey, thanks for the report, James. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back.
Savage.
Did you know that the year Hugo Chavez was elected president, there were 22,000 Jews in Venezuela? But today, the Jewish population is between 10,000 and 15,000. Those numbers tell a story of anti-Semitism, but I don't want to talk about it because it will make me look like I'm un-American. And if Sean Penn likes Chavez, even though he's an anti-Semite, that makes me wrong, doesn't it? It makes me wrong to point out that the Jews are being driven out of Venezuela. It makes me wrong to tell you that the verbiage coming out of Chavez in Spanish, if translated to the German, could be that of Adolf Hitler in the 1930s. And if I told you that verbal and physical attacks on Jews and Jewish institutions in Venezuela in January, for example, were at their greatest level ever, I would make you uncomfortable, and then you might start doubting my Americanism. And I don't want you to doubt my Americanism. And if I tell you that in a report released today, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom puts Venezuela on a watch list of countries where religious freedom is threatened, I don't want to make you think that in any way I'm against Chavez, because Chavez is a good buddy of Obama. After all, Obama and Chavez gave each other the ghetto fist slap, whatever they call it. And I'm sorry to be so out of touch with things that I don't know what the ghetto thing is when you hit fists together. I wish I could use the proper phrase for it. But our leader, our supreme leader, our Messiah, Obama, if he likes Chavez, then I like Chavez. If he says Chavez is a good guy, then I say Chavez is a good guy. And if the Jews are being driven out of Venezuela, well, I guess then we all have to accept that. Because after all, I want to get along and I want to go along. And I don't want to talk about this anymore. I don't want to talk about the Jews being driven out of Venezuela because Sean Penn and the other actors love Chavez. So how could I be right and how could they be wrong? After all, actors are always right. That's why people pay so much money to see them act. They are so good at acting that they must be right about politics. And they're never wrong about anything, so how could they be wrong about Chavez? So if I read that Chavez is a vicious anti-Semite whose language is that of Adolf Hitler in Spanish, why then I must be wrong. And I think that those who oppose Chavez, and in this case agree that Obama should not have visited him, I think that they're wrong. And that's why I say it may be time for me to simply get out of politics and get into storytelling. But, of course, if you wish I do the other, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, has political stories, I'm sorry to tell you. There are many political stories on the website because I'm thinking of converting the entire website to family photos, just black and white family photos from little old Kodak little booklets from the 50s and 60s, because I don't want to upset the social order, because the Messiah is right about everything. That I only want to see happiness in America. I don't want to oppose anybody who believes in Obama. I want to make all those who worship Obama feel good. I want all opposition to Obama to be eliminated. I want anyone who opposes Obama to be investigated. I want anyone who continuously talks against Obama to be jailed. And I want Janet Napolitano, one of the most brilliant women in the history of the world, greater than Marie Curie, possibly one of the most brilliant women in the history of the world, to be put on the Supreme Court. There is no one more brilliant than Janet Napolitano. After all, she wisely targeted returning vets from the Iraq and Afghan theaters as potential terrorists. She wisely targeted people who oppose the murder of unborn children as terrorists. She wisely targeted many, many other fringe groups in America as potential terrorists and paid no attention to our visitors from Central America with tattoos all over their bodies who sell drugs and murder in the streets as threats to America, because she is a wise woman. She knows that if she reaches out to the tattooed clusters of illegals in America, if she reaches out and embraces the clusters of illegal aliens carrying bed bugs, cholera, and other diseases, why, the bed bugs will flee back south of the border. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Obama has said he's open to talking directly with Iran. So now we learn from Ken Timmerman with the Foundation for Democracy in Iran that the Iranian government sent a delegation to Washington in February to meet with the Obama State Department. Nothing surprising there. What's surprising is that they offered to render scores of top al-Qaeda operatives to the U.S. government, and the State Department said no. No? He joins us now to talk about the story. Ken, what's this all about?
You know, Michael, I think the Iranians were even more surprised by the State Department's refusal of their offer than the State Department people were in the first place to hear the Iranians offer to give them these scores and scores of senior al-Qaeda operatives who were in Iran. You know, this is a story that the Iranians believe that they have successfully covered up for many, many years. They have never gotten caught until now for their implication, their direct involvement in the 9/11 attacks. And I think that they believe that they will continue to get away with this, and that the State Department and the Obama administration will not be holding their feet to the fire. And I think there's a difference of perception in Tehran and in Washington. I think that the Obama people at the State Department understand that once the American public hears that Iran has been sheltering senior al-Qaeda operatives in their country under the protection of the intelligence services and of the Revolutionary Guards, once the American people hear this and understand this, I think that they will be asking the administration to take extreme measures against the government of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and I think that will be a justified thing for Americans to ask. People are going to be very angry.
But you're reporting that this wasn't the first contact between Iran and Obama.
Well, that's right, Michael. This is not the first contact between the Iranian regime and the Obama administration. And, of course, there have been contacts ongoing ever since the Bush administration came into power and even before. There has been no lack of contact between Tehran and Washington, despite what the left will tell you about George W. Bush not talking to our enemies. There were over 23 direct contacts between senior U.S. officials and Iranian officials during the Bush administration. But for this present set, this began in December of 2008, when an Iranian diplomat in Turkey was at a reception. He sounded out an American diplomat that he met there about the possibility of sending an emissary to Washington. What the Iranians were immediately worried about in December was the arrest of a gentleman who ran the Alevi Foundation in New York. This is ostensibly a nonprofit foundation in the state of New York, but in fact, it is a branch of the Iranian-based Mostazafan Foundation, which took over the assets of the Shah of Iran after he was forced out of power. So this is a massive state-owned conglomerate. They have a New York operation and a building on Fifth Avenue that's worth several $100 million. The Iranian regime was worried that with the Treasury Department and the FBI's action against that foundation in New York, they were going to lose that asset. The asset would be frozen. They'd lose $300 or $400 million, which they have they've used the interest and the rent money from that building to fund their operations here in the United States and elsewhere. So they were concerned. The diplomat learned in December that the United States did, in fact, want to talk to the regime. And so he came to Washington for a first set of meetings. They were successful. This was with the transition team. Now, the second set of meetings took place in February. And this is when the president of Iran, Ahmadinejad, sent his own emissary, a guy named Ahmad Samavati, to Washington with at the head of a five-man delegation. And Mr. Samavati met at the State Department with senior officials who were dealing with Iran, and he made this stunning offer. He said, look, we're prepared to render to the United States dozens of top al-Qaeda operatives. These are people we've had under arrest in Iran. That's the fiction that they've been using, of course. These are people we have had under arrest in Iran, and we're ready to render them to you. Well, I was told by people who've been following this very closely, Michael, that there are a couple of reasons why the State Department said no. The first was that was very simple. They said, look, we're in the middle of a policy review, so it's too early for us to make a decision on anything involving your country, Iran. But beyond that, I think, as I said, that they were very, very worried. That any leak, and it would become public, that these al-Qaeda operatives had been in Iran would just have create such a furor in the American public that it would undermine the intended policy of the Obama White House, which is to reach out to this radical Islamic regime in Tehran. So they turned down the offer and said, we don't want to have any al-Qaeda people from Iran coming to this country.
Okay, so state was worried, but it didn't end there. The contacts didn't stop, did they?
Well, that's right, Michael. It didn't end there. This was just the beginning of these contacts. The State Department agreed, even though they turned down that Iranian offer in February, they agreed to send a delegation of U.S. officials to Tehran at the end of March of this year. And so they continued these discussions. And by this point, the Iranians were saying that, look, we do want to have this global comprehensive agreement with the United States. There are things that we want from you. We want, for example, we want to be allowed to continue to enrich uranium. And you saw, of course, there was a leak to the New York Times about 3 weeks ago that said that the Obama administration was ready to do just that, to allow the Iranian regime to continue to enrich uranium. So these talks, these backdoor talks, have had some effect. They've had some immediate results. Another set of talks involves officials from the Pentagon. And my sources have been telling me, Michael, that there was a meeting on Kish Island in the Persian Gulf between a senior U.S. general from the region. I was originally told it was General Petraeus, but the general's aides told me point blank that he never went to Kish and he has not met with Iranian government officials, period. So it was somebody else. But that meeting led for the purpose of discussing an agreement whereby the Iranians would allow the United States to move some of our military forces and equipment through Iran into Afghanistan in support of the NATO operation. And this was, in fact, leaked to the Iranian parliament on April 15th, and the parliament had a discussion in open session in Tehran. This then was, you know, talked about on some of the Persian language websites, which I and my team of investigators took a look at. The funny thing is that the head of the Iranian Defense and Foreign Affairs Commission, Aladin Boyujerdi, had to calm down some of the legislators who just freaked out at the idea that they would be having that the Islamic Republic of Iran would be having a military agreement with the United States. You know, the irony here, of course, is that if this does in fact happen, and the United States moves military equipment through Iran into southern Afghanistan, it'll be the first time that we have had a military, any kind of military cooperation with the Islamic Republic of Iran since Iran-Contra. And you saw where that got us, didn't you?
Well, what else is Iran demanding?
Well, Michael, another demand that the Iranians have been making is for the Obama administration to quash these terrorism lawsuits against the Islamic Republic. There's something like $8 billion worth of judgments and compensatory damages that have already been awarded to the families of victims of terrorist acts that were carried out with the support of the Iranian regime. And the regime in Tehran is starting to get a bit worried. They're beginning to see the parallels with Libya's Gaddafi, where Gaddafi essentially bought his way back into the community of nations by paying off the terrorism lawsuits, the Pan Am 103 victims, the victims of the Lebel bombings, paying billions of dollars in compensatory damages to essentially buy himself a clean slate with the rest of the world. Iran, the Iranian leaders, the Islamic Republic leaders, the mullahs, see that they may have to do something similar to that, but they would like to lower the cost. Already $8 billion is a lot of money, but there's another judgment that could be coming down in the next year or so from the victims of the 9/11 attacks, and that could be 10 times as much as has already been awarded to the victims of terrorism. So the Iranian regime would very much like to get that off the table. They would like to clear these negotiations before there's a new judgment handed out down against them. And I think that's one of the reasons that they are in a hurry to conclude a deal with the United States.
Well, thanks, Ken. This more transparent administration has a lot more going on they're telling us about. I, Michael Savage, will be right back.
Savage.
Napolitano flu is obviously a big story. Rather, the government's failure to act properly to limit the spread of this flu is the story. Joining us now for report on this is medical expert and blogger Robert Scott Bell. Robert, what are you seeing?
Thank you, Michael. What we have here with the swine flu, of course, it's looking at this point, fortunately, to be not as severe as it may have been. And despite the high levels of inadequacy and incompetence within the federal government, which I guess is not surprising, we have a situation that the flu was supposedly had killed 131 total cases around the United States for this H1N1 potential pandemic situation. Now, what I've seen here, looking at the medical side of things and talking with a lot of physician friends around the country, they're looking at the impact of this being negligible compared to a typical influenza year. But they also recognized and addressed some interesting things regarding the true death rate or the reason for the deaths that may be occurring in Mexico. And this has to do with the health of the people, obviously, that are contracting this influenza virus. Now, in Mexico, the acknowledgement, of course, if you've ever flown into Mexico City, you can literally land on the air. It's 10 times thicker, I think, than in the worst of days in Los Angeles years past. And because of that, these kids growing up into young adults have equivalents, as some say, as much as smoking a pack of cigarettes a day throughout their entire life. Now, pigs, of course, eat a lot of nasty stuff, but I don't even think in their worst days they were eating rendered animal proteins that potentially could contain prions that are associated with the mad cow disease. And because of their concern for development of prions, they're processing these things at lower heat, which is allowing microbes to flourish, including viral proteins in the food that is being fed to these pigs. So, of course, we're going to see these strange new strains appear, but we have a government that largely turns a blind eye to certain agricultural practices in defense of certain global corporations that have no allegiance to any nation or state, much less the health of the American people, which is very upsetting. So in one context, we're looking to government to say, hey, how do we protect ourselves from this flu? On another level, they're the ones allowing some of these practices that bring rise or give rise to these strange new diseases. So this is something to consider when we're looking at the dangerous new strains or potential pandemics in the future. Now, if we go back to 1918 and the influenza, Spanish influenza, we certainly know loads of people died, and that's something we wouldn't want to see again here. But we also got to take into context the terrain of the times as well and relate them to the terrain of the times today. Now, when we consider again that people aren't dying necessarily directly from influenza, but the co-infections or the resulting infections, bacterial and otherwise, pneumonia-type diseases in the lungs, we have to ask, why is it in those people that it rises to a devastating level, these secondary issues that are ending up really resulting in death, and why are those that are healthy staying healthy? And unfortunately, our Health and Human Services system, FDA, CDC, they don't tend to ask the question of why do the healthy people stay healthy? Now, we of course know practicing proper hygiene, avoiding extreme exposures or overexposures to some of these virulent strains is always going to be a benefit, and common sense should prevail. But to think that the federal government could come in and protect us from, you know, things that we should know already tells me all I need to know about the reliance on government schools, government education, PE and health education. You remember all of that. And it's also said that whoever writes the history books can corrupt history, and the people learning from those books never know. And what we lose sight of is that in the history of the influenza and other fever diseases, the typhus and the typhoid diseases, that very often in what was known as the homeopathic hospitals of the early 20th century, the survival rate was closing in on 100%, where the death rate within the allopathic traditional petrochemical pharmaceuticals following Rockefeller's path was actually closer to 50% mortality. So there are other schools of thought that are not considered when we're looking at true prevention.
How does this relate to today?
Well, the FDA recently on the 27th of April in rise with this so-called pandemic flu potential, FDA authorized emergency use of influenza medicines, diagnostic tests in response to swine flu outbreak in humans. Now, on the surface, that seems rather responsible. Let's open the floodgates and allow things that are maybe experimental to be out there. But the concern I have is that the last time the federal government intervened in a swine flu in 1976, it resulted in far more deaths than, the one death that was attributed to swine flu in 1976. So they don't have a great track record in acknowledging or understanding what is good medicine. So in this case, under bioterror, let's call it threats that have resulted in new legislation being passed, they can open the floodgates wide, and those that are forced perhaps to accept these experimental medicines or vaccinations could be harmed, and as a result of the legislation, not have any recourse defense should they be harmed or even a loved one be damaged or killed by these experimental medicines. Yet on the other side, they go after any kind of natural botanical element that may have historical use in prevention and treatment of viral or bacterial or other diseases, as if they are in violation of some law that suddenly is lifted by these FDA proclamations. So there is definitely, a double standard in regards to the ability of Americans to have freedom to know and have information and then act on that information in the care and protection of their family and loved ones should such an outbreak like we're seeing here occur.
What else do we need to consider?
Michael, the other thing to consider, again, with government intervention, of course, is the money being spent, the money that we clearly don't have. You've got a lot of liberal bloggers evidently claiming that we're not spending enough. $1.5 billion is not enough. And, you know, of course, we stockpiled hundreds of millions of dollars worth of Tamiflu and also Relenza is another antiviral. But some reports are showing that it could be 97-98% resistance already within the influenza virus kingdom, so to speak, for these antiviral drugs. And also what happened in Japan is very disconcerting, especially the children on the Tamiflu were having delusional events and episodes. Some, in fact, climbing out of second-story windows, walking across the street, getting hit by cars or something. So this reliance, again, on the wrong thing is pretty much typical to government in this regard. So it isn't about throwing more money. It's about utilizing common sense. And I remember, you know, Joe Biden has been criticized for his statement of staying away from airplanes and other. And look, you know, I believe everybody should have the freedom to make that decision based on what they believe or perceive the threat level to be. And I've got no problem coming in from Mexico that we should have people on the border seeing, are people sick? Are they feverish? You know, when I went to Asia during the height of the SARS epidemic, I also was, you know, the moment I got off the plane in Hong Kong, they shot me with this air gun to see if I had an elevated temperature. Now, it's perfectly reasonable to say, well, if you do, where have you been? Have you come into contact with anybody? Really do some legitimate homework so that you can prevent any carriers putting people in America at risk. There's absolutely everything right with that. But what we've got, of course, is to look at the reason why the healthy people stay healthy, and the government can't do that. We've got the Health and Human Services, the new secretary there. They're clueless in this regard what to do. And even if they knew what to do, the bureaucratic oligarchy that is so involved in this regard is like it trying to turn a mile-long ship around. By the time they even react, even if it's appropriate, it's going to be so late the circumstances have already changed. And that's why, again, our over-reliance on federal authorities could be very damaging and dangerous to our health. And that's why another thing is the economic impact of this. Of course, stating everybody should stay home and not fly, again, perfectly fine to get that information out there if you'd like. But, of course, the economy is right on the edge as it's been for a while here. So there are considerations there. But what I'm seeing out there and talking to my physician friends all over the United States, many of them moving toward holistic medicines and therapies, they're also seeing a resurgence, if you will, in direction into the health food natural products industry, something you know with the botanicals that you have a history of researching, that people are now looking back to the natural things. There are natural antivirals, and there are abilities to combat these things without resorting to drugs that may or may not work or may kill you, in fact, as we saw in the previous intervention by government in 1976, particularly to this case.
Where can we get more info?
Well, you can always go to my blog at robertscottbell.blogspot.com or just Google Robert Scott Bell and flu and you'll come up. I've been blogging on this since the beginning, getting information out that no one else seems to be covering. Also, I'll be lecturing at the Health Freedom Expo in June in Chicago. I'll be one of the featured speakers, and I'll be lecturing on this issue, pandemic influenza, what to do about it from the natural world, talking about solutions for prevention and treatment that you don't hear about anywhere else. So good opportunities to get the word out. And again, Michael, I appreciate all you're doing to restore that kind of concept of the American spirit and individual liberty in the protection of the sovereignty of our nation and its health sovereignty.
Thanks for the report, Robert. People need to know all of the info out there, not just what our government wants us to learn. This is The Savage Nation. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.